You know, throughout the world, skulls have been the foremost symbol of death, a powerful icon in the vocabularies of cultures all over the planet. And 13 crystal skulls of apparent ancient origin have been found in parts of Mexico, Central America, and South America, comprising some very fascinating subjects of the 20th century archaeology. Now, these skulls found near the ancient ruins of Mayan and Aztec civilizations are a mystery just as strange as the pyramids of Egypt or the Nazca lines of Peru that we've talked so much about. And some skulls are believed to be between 5,000 and 36,000 years old. And many people of the ancient times talk of their remarkable magical and healing properties. In a moment, Richard Schafsky joins us as we talk about crystal skulls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. So who is Richard Schafsky? Well, he's a man that started his adulthood in a normal fashion. He had a job, a family, and then one day at work, he ran into a snag, which led him to find a resolution to outside normal channels. On that day, he decided to embark on a journey from which he has never returned. Under the tutelage of the founder of the Crystal Skull Society and a Mayan shaman priest in Mexico, he was introduced to the Mayan crystal skull and was charged with many life assignments that 30 years later has brought him to this program. Tonight, our guest, Richard Schafsky. Hey, Richard, how are you? Richard, are you there? Well, we will see where Richard Schafsky is. Maybe the Mayan skulls have captured Richard Schafsky. We don't know where he may be. He was just there seconds ago. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the crystal skulls to make sure that we can get our connection with Mr. Schafsky. Like I said, there are 13 skulls, crystal skulls, that have been found on this planet. And there are several very famous crystal skulls. So one of them, the Mitchell Hedges crystal skull. Now, that's the most widely celebrated and mysterious one of all kind for two reasons. First, it's very similar in form to an actual human skull. It even has a fittable, removable jawbone. And most known crystal skulls are of more stylized structures, often with unrealistic features and teeth that are simply etched into a single skull piece. And secondly, it's impossible to say how the Mitchell Hull's skull was constructed. Now, from a technical standpoint, it appears to be an impossible object, which today's most talented sculptors and engineers would be unable to duplicate. Now, the discovery of this baffling artifact is a controversial matter. It was brought into prominence by a British explorer, F.A. Mitchell Hedges, who claimed that his daughter unearthed it in 1924. Mitchell Hedges led an expedition into the ancient Mayan ruins in Belize, searching for evidence of Atlantis when all this happened. Now, this story goes on, I hope I don't tell all of it, but the story goes on that his daughter Anna was rummaging inside a structure believed to have once been a temple when she found the beautifully carved cranium of the crystal skull. So that's one of the major ones there. And we're going to talk with Richard about, of course, the Mayan crystal skull. And that, too, is just an incredible skull. Richard, we've got your back, huh?
You bet.
There you go. I was talking a little bit about one of the most famous skulls. That's the Mitchell Hedges skulls. But you've done a lot of work with the Mayan crystal skull. Tell me about that.
Yes, George. I was first introduced to the Mayan crystal skull back in the early 1970s. I was at that time working for a trucking company in the San Francisco Bay Area. There was a strike going on, and a shipment was lost that was a very important corporate client. I went to a co-employee. I was the operations manager at that time of the trucking company. And I went to a fellow employee, and knowing that his father was a psychic, and I was having to go out of bounds, but I had to locate this shipment. Anyway, he introduced me to his father. His name was Nick Nocerino. Now, Nick was the founder of the Crystal Skull Society back in 1948. Nick invited me over to his home where he gave me what we would know as a reading. During that reading, he was not only able to locate the crystal, or not the crystal for me, the shipment for me. He identified exactly where it was located in the warehouse, but he also passed to me a photocopy of what I didn't know at the time was a crystal skull that later to became to be known as the Mayan crystal skull.
You know, Richard, I've been talking about these skulls being anywhere between 5,000 and 36,000 years old. Do you subscribe to that?
Oh, George, I think actually they're much older than that. When I went down to Mexico, and which is where I found myself about 2 years after I had the reading with Frank Nazareno, he told me I would be coming into contact with the crystal skull and that I would play a pivotal, crucial role in bringing it up into the United States. Well, when I went down to Mexico, I was at a business meeting. And at that meeting, I had a crystal with me that Frank had given to me. I transferred it from one pocket to another. And there were businessmen there from Mexico City, but there were also a couple of men from Oaxaca. One of the men from Oaxaca showed up at my door in the hotel a couple of hours later, and when he knocked on the door, I opened it. He came in. He saw the crystal that I had sitting on the bed, which he had noticed I had in my hand during our meeting, mm-hmm. and he walked over. He picked it up, and the moment he picked it up, he looked at me and he said, "Ah, Ricardo, Pyramido Egypto." And skull. Well, there was the image of a crystal skull in that crystal that I had. Now, this Mayan I came to know as Francisco. Francisco was a Mayan shaman. He was the last of a lineage of Mayan priests that had protected this particular skull known as the Mayan skull for far longer than 5,000 years. In fact, in the history of the lineage of the Mayan shaman and those that preceded the shaman, it goes back, my understanding, several hundred thousand years.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Now, we believe that there are 13 crystal skulls that have been discovered so far. Do you agree with that number?
Well, I don't, George, disagree with that number. I really don't know where that number 13 came up. It's been circulated around for a very long time. I'm personally aware of nine, what we'll call ancient crystal skulls. I'm sure that there are 13. I do believe there are probably more than 13. 13 is a significant number in the circles that talk about the skulls, but I don't really know that I can say that there are only 13 or that there is any significance with that.
Richard, do they all look the same or are they different?
Oh, some of them are quite different, George. For example, the Mitchell Hedges skull has a detachable jaw. It is of clear crystal quartz. Now, the Mayan skull, which I brought in, that does not have a detachable jaw. It is made of clear quartz crystal. It's rather crude looking in some ways compared to the Mitchell Hedges. Now, the skulls that I'm aware of, some are of clear quartz crystal, similar to Max, for example, which you've had on your show before.
Right.
The Mayan skull and Max are similar in the type of crystal they're made from.
Also they're, called the Texas crystal skull.
The Texas Max, crystal right. skull, yes, in the good safekeeping of Joanne Parks.
Yes.
And there are other crystal skulls that are made of amethyst. Some are of a beautiful, beautiful aquamarine. Some are of a rose quartz. Some look rather crude. Some are very, shall we say, modern and very well-defined, like the Mitchell Hedges.
The skulls themselves, how do you think they were made, even if they were made way back into antiquity days?
Well, you know, that's a question that there's a lot of speculation about. There are several theories as to how they were made. Now, the ones that are the true ancient skulls, the listening audience should understand that they don't have what we would call wheel markings on them, nor do they have what we would be able to identify as carving markings on them. Taking these into the crystal labs at Hewlett-Packard, also Bell Laboratories, where we took the Mayan skull, they the stone should chatter. So the technology that was actually used to manufacture them, I'm not really sure of. I do know the stones did come, the quartz that they were made from actually did come from here on planet Earth. I do believe that the stone for the Mayan skull, for example, is very similar to the quartz crystal that comes out of Arkansas. There are some of the skulls are from stone that does appear to come out of South America in the Brazil area. Now, so we know that they came from Earth, but who manufactured them and how they actually manufactured them, I think, is anyone's speculation.
These skulls, when they're used, and we're going to get into the purpose and get your definition of the crystal skull, but
sure.
I mean, do the shamans or whoever uses them, do they use sunlight to generate it? Do the eyes get red? Is there any physical change when something happens to them?
Oh, George, yes. Now we're going to get into an arena that is really quite fascinating. The ancient crystal skulls have piezoelectric properties, and our tests and our work with them showed that they could be activated using light, using sound. In fact, there was some real good work that was done by Stephen Halperin. Stephen brought in and we subjected the Mayan skull to what are known as Peruvian singing vessels. And each time you change a note, each time you change an octave, you get different images that will come up in this stone. And I'd like to talk about at some point what those images are.
Sure.
Also, as you expose the crystal skulls to different colors in the light spectrum, again, you'll change channels, you'll change images. Now, some of these images are quite small. In fact, they're miniature. Others encompass the entire stone. And they're not vague. Though I want the listening audience to know that this is as clear as looking at a modern TV screen, a modern computer screen. And a shaman who has been trained in the correct working of a stone is able to also activate it mentally. And when that activation takes place, then there are many, many, many opportunities to take advantage of the doorways that are opened up to actually have direct communication with those that are in our galactic neighborhood, but not necessarily here on planet Earth.
The next Indiana Jones film will be about crystal skulls. So if there hasn't been tremendous interest in the skulls yet, there sure will be, Richard. Fascinating.
Well, you know, George, it's interesting, this Indiana Jones film that's coming out now with George Lucas. Frank Nocerino actually met with George Lucas some 30 years ago, and I happened to be at that meeting just by happenstance where George was asking Frank about different properties of the crystal skulls, and I can assure you that there are things that I haven't spoken of for 30 years that the stones are, what they represent. These skulls are stargates. They are quantum tools. You know, people talk about, they use the word quantum today. That's quite common in our daily language now. Well, quantum means to be able to go beyond the parameters or the constrictions, as you would, of space, time, and distance. When you activate and you work with one of the crystal skulls, you are certainly going quantum. This is high science, and you're not at all constricted by the parameters of space, time, distance. You can see the past. You can see right now, you could go into a crystal and you could communicate with somebody off planet, which, by the way, I have some real fond names for some of those that we are in direct communication with off planet.
All right. We'll talk about that tonight, too. That's fascinating all by itself.
It sure is. It sure is. And I'm looking forward to it because these are entities that do have a message for us. And what I would like to cover tonight is the message and how this relates to the Mayan calendar, the role of the skull. skulls play with the Mayan calendar and its fulfillment, and also introduce the listening audience to some of those that are in our galactic neighborhood that have been very, very influential, very present here for millennia.
That's fascinating.
To communicate with.
Fascinating, and it also brings a new twist to the Mayan calendar end date, or it could be the beginning date, as far as I know.
Well, the message that I would like to relay tonight, and this is probably the main purpose of my mission, the lineage of the Mayan priests that had the protection, were responsible for the protection of the skulls through millennia, with Francisco, that lineage ended. Now, I was told and I was given the mandate to transfer the Mayan skull and its information into what we know as the fifth world. The fifth world being the world of illumination, the world of peace, the time of science and prosperity. That is the era that we are going into. The Mayan calendar ends in 2012. Now, George, the message as it was relayed to me is 2012 is the end of the Mayan civilization, the Mayan society. That is when their role in the protection of the skulls, their role in this world of transference, that's when it's completed. There is no lineage to go back to. That is the end there. Now we are coming into the fifth world, which is our world, George. And that was what I was tasked to do. In fact, Francisco relayed to me that I would be speaking to the masses, to millions of people, to relay this message that 2012, it is over for the Mayans. However, it is to be the time of introduction for the new science. And as we know, there are cataclysms that were prophesied that they were going to occur at this time. And this will be the end of the Mayans. However, it is not the end of the information, of the knowledge, of the science that has been transferred over into our world by the Mayan priests through the crystal skulls.
These crystal skulls, Richard, prior to their being turned into a skull, what does the quartz crystal or the crystal look like? Is it smooth, bumpy? What's it look like?
Well, actually, they were large pieces of quartz crystal, and they had to be very large in order to be able to be configured into the shape and size of a human skull. Some of them, George, are smaller. They're softball size. Some of them go down, and they're actually smaller than that. But the stones from which these human-sized crystal skulls were made, those crystals had to be very large. And I've been to the Tucson Gem and Mineral Show, for example, and we have seen some examples of quartz crystals that certainly are of a size that could be worked, that could be molded into something of human skull size, but they had to be very large. And George, by the way, the Vatican has a large repository of crystal skulls that were plundered by the Jesuits. These were really sought after by the popes back in the early times when Christianity was coming into the New World. Now, the ones that are in the Vatican, most of those are softball size. They are not of the large human skull size that we're talking about tonight.
All right, when we come back, tell us how they were made, in your opinion. I always think of the movie Journey to the Center of the Earth with Pat Boone, James Mason, when they were down there in the center, and they were in that crystal area, and they chipped one off, and then they had that incredible underground flood. You might remember that. We'll be back with our guest tonight, Richard Schefsky, as we talk about crystal skulls next on Coast to Coast AM. We're with Richard Schefsky. Richard, so in your opinion, how are these crystal skulls made? How are they grinded?
Well, George, I don't believe that they were ground at all. What I was able to observe in the crystal skull would be a group of what I call, these are aliens that I call the bubbleheads. They're humanoid, have kind of a larger head than we have, not quite the same distinct features. And they would stand around a skull, and what they would be doing, they would be directing what I think we could probably call some sort of a lased light onto the crystal. And as that lased light was onto the crystal, you would see it begin to form into a humanoid configuration. That's what I was able to observe. Now, what that technology actually was, what that light actually was, I could not say.
Okay, fascinating. All right, so these skulls are made. There's got to be a purpose. There's got to be a direction. There's got to be a reason, right?
There sure is. And this is part of what, this is part of the main message. These skulls are stargates. When you're in the presence of them and you can look in, you can actually see a vortex form. It goes, and then you have images come up. You can see and you can view those in other dimensions. You can view the past. You can see past civilizations. You're able to observe former prior eras on Earth, for example, where there were ice sheets at one time covering a good part of the Earth. You get to look at and observe pyramids under construction. You can see spaceships, what we would call spaceships today, flying saucers. You also get to have direct contact, if you would like, with those that are aliens. And at the same time that you have these visuals, if you've been trained, you're going to realize you're getting downloaded with a tremendous amount of information. Now, that information is what is really truly necessary for us to survive these coming, what we'll call tough times here on planet Earth, which are certainly starting to reveal themselves. We're coming into an age where water resources are contaminated. They are polluted. We're coming into a time when food resources are short. And in fact, we have Terminator genes out there, so everybody isn't getting fed. We do have to take advantage of new technology for the generation of power. Now, different sciences that are going to be necessary for not just our survival, but for our continuing into the future and joining the galactic neighborhood, if you will, we're going to have to take advantage of cleaning up our environment. We're going to have to take advantage of new science to generate power, to run everything from household appliances to starships. This information does come forth out of the crystal skulls.
Okay, now you have alluded several times about the ET involvement with these skulls and other life forms as well.
Yes.
Are they here?
Well, some of them most certainly are. And I think I know they have been here for a very long time. Some of the ones that we can observe, George, that go back into what we would call our very early or our prehistory, they look like the giants that Steve Quayle has related
sure.
to
okay.
on the show. Oh, yes. And in fact, the giants are very present in the Mayan history. The skulls were at one time a Mayan shaman, for example, could protect his people from the giants. I remember, George, traveling in Central America with Francesco, the Mayan priest. There are a lot of limestone caves there. Some of those caves were pointed out to me as being in prehistory, as being occupied by giants. Now, those giants were able to emanate a psychic field that was very debilitating. In fact, it could be crippling to the human physiology. A shaman was able to take the crystal skull, for example, the Mayan crystal skull, and get that psychic energy contained within the skull and then reflect it right back onto the giant. And we have scenes where then the giant goes down and the shaman's warriors, the Order of the Jaguar, the Order of the Eagle, they were able to come forward and effectively dispatch the giant. So there's, you know, we have things in our history that have not really been revealed so far, as Steve Quayle has done a real good job about the giants. Now, and also, by the way, it was very obvious that some of the human sacrifices that were attributed to the Mayans to appease their gods, I can tell you for sure those were not just sacrifices to appease the gods. They were actually sacrifices that were done to feed the giants and to keep them from coming out and plundering in the middle of the night, let's say, an entire village.
They'd rather say, hey, here's your meal, leave us alone.
Exactly. And when I spoke with Steve about this, he concurred, and I was actually able to observe this in some of the images within the skull. Now, the ETs that were present and that still do continue to be present, some of them are in the configuration of what we would call the grays. Those are not necessarily friendly at all, and I would not consider them to be friendly. I'm not sure that they're even of a life form that we recognize as being a life form. But there are other ET presences that they appear to be very human. Some of them are very large in stature, by the way. And we do have, in the Mayan history, consideration for actually genetic splicing, if you will, genetic manipulation, where the gene pool of us humans was intersected with some of the genes from those that are off-planet to help our brains grow, to help us be able to assimilate and take care of the planet, because we needed the information and our brains were worked with. And so the Mayans are actually a link to the progenitors who created the skulls, and those were definitely ET. We still do not have a science today here that is able to manufacture these skulls without them just totally shattering it and falling apart.
Do any of these skulls resemble the aliens, the ETs? I mean,
yes.
They do. Okay.
Yes. Some of them do, and the ones that do actually have a very long, elongated facial features, a very high forehead. And what I have seen with the ETs, and these would be the ones that I would call the bubbleheads.
Yes.
Again, they are humanoid, but they have a very large, elongated front facial structure, and it's they have a higher brow, a higher forehead than we do. Now, there are some of the skulls that do have that type of a depiction.
Okay, now, how would a shaman use the skulls in these rituals? And we'll get into healing in a second.
Sure.
But, for example, how to, let's say, block off these giants from attacking.
Okay, what the shaman would do, he would go out to the entrance of where one of the caves were. Now, the giants came out mostly at night. They were creatures that did their hunting after dark. What they would do is they would throw some smoke bundles up to the front of the cave. They would draw a giant out. They would hold the shaman would hold the skull up in front of the giant. Once he was into the field where he began to get a headache, he knew he was within that psychic emanating field of the giant. And with the skill of a shaman, he would actually be able to reflect that energy right back into the giant, give him a master headache, in fact, take him down, and then they would be able to dispatch him in several different ways. That might be with rocks, it might be with spears, tipped with chiari, for example.
But they'd kill him.
That was not somebody they were going to let survive. If at all possible, they wanted to take him out.
I wonder if it ever backfired on the shaman, or it didn't work at that particular time, and then the giant got him or something.
Well, I think it probably more than once did. Although the record that I saw, from what I understood from Francesco, the giants had a very high respect, a very high regard for the shaman with the crystal skull. And the images that I saw, the giant never won.
Well, that's an interesting thought right there. Do we know where any of these creatures came from specifically?
The legend, and in the historical record of the Mayan, and actually those that predated the Mayan, we're looking at the Olmecs and some cultures before that, they do have a relationship in their record to the Pleiades, also to the Sirius star systems. You see, to the Mayans, to the Olmecs, the question of aliens is really not a question. Their history is rich with interaction. Their history is rich with contact. And the Mayans in their astronomy, for example, the way they would align and configure their temples, these were done with a off-planet knowledge of astrophysics that one really couldn't have if they just had if they were just within their own Earth-contained environment. They did have to understand astronomy. And so there are depictions in pictographs of aliens that are passing a skull, which we know to understand to be a crystal skull, to a Mayan shaman. That's in a pictograph actually in Tikal. And it's many of those pictographs, by the way, have been misinterpreted as to what was going on there. Maybe we can touch upon that at some point. But the alien connection is part of their historic record, and certainly the alignment, the configuration, and the Mayan calendar. And this is another part of the message that is very important to convey to the listening audience, to millions out there, is that the information for the Mayan calendar was contained within the crystal skulls. And that is what one of the main messages of the Mayan priests that protected these for centuries, for thousands of years actually, is that the information for the calendar was actually contained and could be drawn out of the Mayan skull. And you know, they would have
like a computer chip would work.
Very much like a computer chip would work. In fact, a computer is a very good analogous tool to what a crystal skull is. You know, today we know and we understand, well, we can go back to when we were Boy Scouts in our youth, George, we could make a crystal radio. Today we have quartz crystal silicon chips that power everything from TVs and computers to household appliances that are responsible for a jet or any of our automobiles to be able to run. The information and the holding of that information, the storage of that information, then the presentation of that information, that is what a crystal skull is able to do. And it's not at all different from what we do today with a quartz crystal silicon chip.
That is remarkable that technology would exist even then.
Well, you know, it not only was able to exist then, but I think probably in a fashion that we have not yet achieved today. George, we have the most fantastic technology today where we're able to micronize a quartz crystal, take it down, make a computer chip out of it, and run everything that we understand to be in our new enlightened age. Well, for these makers to be able to put that technology into a large natural quartz crystal and then have it become part that was laid out there to them for their protection. These tools are high science. These are quantum tools. We can recover information about the past, the present, and the future. We can open a stargate, a stargate being a doorway. The physics is very complicated, but here we actually have an instrument where we can pull the visuals up. I would like to see some future work done where we really apply our science to these crystal skulls and start to take advantage as to what their full capabilities truly are.
Have you heard stories that the Atlanteans had a massive crystal that somehow sank along with the continent or island? And to this day, that's one of the reasons where we have these disappearances and these strange things happening in the Bermuda Triangle.
Yes, George, I've heard that. In fact, I've had many late-night conversations about that with Francisco. Now, in the Mayan tradition, they understand Atlantis to have actually been out just off the area, what we call the Caribbean, perhaps where the Bermuda Triangle is.
Edgar Casey would call it Bimini.
There you go. And the Mayan shaman, that is part of what they know to be actual fact, that yes, that did exist there. The large crystals could actually have been considered to be like master computers. Then you had the crystal skulls that were a little bit smaller, but they could tie into, shall we call it, home base. And then you could have these other crystals and smaller crystal skulls that would be like desktop computers. And they were all interconnected. We were able to communicate not only with ourselves here on Earth, but out into the galactic community. And the Atlantean legend, that's accepted as being fact in the Mayan tradition. And it is all tied directly to the crystals and the crystal skulls.
Richard, you don't have a website. I don't have a book here that you seem to be selling. So what's your effort here? What's the purpose for you?
George, I have not capitalized on my part of this journey. No, I don't have a website. I'm not promoting a book. I don't have a CD. I'm not making a movie. And I've kept silent for 30 years. There are those that are able to, that are capitalizing on it, and that's just fine. My part of the journey was to make sure that it was safely transferred from one world to the next. That was what was my challenge that I had to face. I was specifically destined, and I was specifically chosen and identified by Frank Nocerino, and then by Francisco, the Mayan priest, to be the one to bring the crystal skull forward into our world and also speak to the masses about what it contained. Now, I will leave it to others to speculate. Everybody is welcome. And there are certainly those that are very uncomfortable, in fact, a little bit deranged, George, about my being out here tonight. Oh, my gosh, the words out there in the crystal skull world is, who is he and what is he going to say? What is he going to do? In fact, there are probably some careers that could succeed or fail based upon what I say.
Richard, let's talk about healing when we come back. We'll talk about the Mayan calendar. And also, what do the skulls say about Earth changes? I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.